This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
All of you guys to come on because you're bringing so much enthusiasm by just being like, what can I do? What do other people do? What are, you know, and it's, that's what everybody's been like. Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to talk about? What is it? And it's just fun. Let's just have fun. That's what I keep saying, but it's all up to you. Do you have anything in mind?
Well, I mean, like I said, I don't think anybody's talked about Book of Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know if you have any strong opinions on that, either way.
I kind of do. So we can hit on that.
Yeah.
Do you have strong opinions?
So I honestly, I loved it. I'm an unabashed Star Wars nerd. So,
yes.
You know, pretty much anything that Filoni and Favreau do seems to be really good. And, you know, I even the little stuff that everybody, like the bikes being too bright or looking like scooters and all that stuff. Like, I can completely forgive that stuff because they are basically writing Star Wars for, like, they're the Star Wars nerds and they're writing what they would want to watch. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate, you know, the amount of passion they put into it, the callbacks, the little details that they put into it. And so for me, I don't watch it with a critical eye. Saying, you know, I didn't like that particular piece, some episodes were, you know, better than others. And, you know, there's a few things that I wish they would have done. I wish they would have, you know, done more with the Tuskens. I think that was kind of a wasted opportunity. They did all this buildup, to all of a sudden have, you know, the Tuskens just get slaughtered. And I was hoping that they would somehow, you know, be part of the final battle.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing to me, and it's like I hate to do this with Star Wars, but I have to push back a little bit here because the thing is, I agree with you, Filoni and Favreau. It's almost like they can't do wrong, but I really feel like here's an they missed an opportunity, I think, to go in a direction that Star Wars hadn't gone in yet. And yep. Actually be a little bit, a little darker and come up with like almost like an anti-hero in Boba Fett. Yep. And instead of doing that, they went all like cookie cutter good guy. And they honestly, in my opinion, they kind of ruined a beloved character from when we were kids. And I say beloved because it's those memories that we had of Boba Fett as a kid, which were all made up in our head because there was no information, right? And that's what we rely on, you know, Filoni for, especially, is that he has been so good at pulling that information, the lore out of our heads and putting it on the screen for us to see for the first time. Different incidents, you know, going for in the past that he's done that with Clone Wars and with Rebels and then of course Mandalorian and stuff. But now you took an actual character that was basically just a piece of clay at that time. You know, we had a direction that we thought of him, and they just 180'd it and turned him into this, basically he's just a good guy. Which, that's fine, but Star Wars is full of those. I really can't think of an anti-hero in Star Wars. Can you?
What I would have loved them to do is, because in The Mandalorian, he was brutal. So he came in, he, you know, basically fought those stormtroopers and just demolished them.
And that's the one we knew.
Yeah, and what I would have loved to see is them say, okay, so he's been living with the Tuskens, so he's learned the way of peace. But he can turn that off in a second. And I would have loved to see, you know, him saying, no, I don't want to fight you, you know, leave peacefully. And then when they said, no, we're not leaving, then that Boba Fett that we knew was there came out. Right. And I would have loved to see him just go to town and be brutal and, you know, get that gaffy stick out and just start beating people down. And, you know, the Rancor, I wanted so much more from the Rancor because you had all this buildup and, you know, you had Machete there, which was awesome. I love Danny Trejo. And I was like, okay, so what's he going to do? Is he going to play a part in this? And I would have loved to see that. And I hope that they will do something for the next season that will, like you said, add that darkness and maybe take him down a different path.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think they showed they weren't afraid of that because, you know, you had Mando pull out the Darksaber and cut that guy completely in half and take his head off. Now, obviously, you didn't see the head come off on screen, right. But you saw him cut that table in half.
Yeah.
So I would like to see that sort of, I think Star Wars definitely could go darker.
Yeah. And I just want that darker character, you know, a little bit like just get that, like I said, make Boba Fett the anti-hero that we wanted him to be, which in a way is like, it's almost, if you made him an anti-hero, that's still pulling him back a little bit from the ruthless person that we thought he was.
Absolutely.
Right. And they went a 180 on that. And that's the part they went too far, making him too good. And I just, that to me is the gist of it, of the entire season that made it like, okay, not so good. I mean, I love the Mandalorian stuff. And I did hear somebody, one of my buddies from my other podcast that listens said that the, how we're all like, well, this is really just, you know, Mandalorian season 2.5.
Exactly.
Right? And we're making fun of it by saying that. But in a way, what I heard, what he was saying, my buddy Zach said, was it actually is that. And that's why it's called the Book of Boba Fett. This is all supposed to be in the Mandalorian story. And this is just the chapter of Boba Fett.
Well, I never thought of it that way. That's a really good way of looking at it.
I didn't either. And when I heard that, I was like, okay, that makes it a little bit. I still don't like what they did with Boba Fett, but it makes the season make a little bit more sense. And why it was like, I don't know why they didn't explain why that's not more public, if that's actually the case, or maybe that's, you know, it could be some fans just saying, hey, this is what we should be calling it. I don't know, but it does make more sense that way. And I think if they had advertised it as such, I think we would have been more forgiving. But at the same time, at the very beginning, we would have been like, all right, if this is season 2.5, you know, where's Mando? And, you know, but we did get him. And when we did, that's when the season took off.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing I have to think is, what if the Book of Boba Fett was the first thing they produced, and then they followed up with The Mandalorian, because The Mandalorian was such a amazing show. I mean, that was one show that I think I've watched it 8 times now, every single episode.
Yeah.
I was watching it last night. Yeah. And, you know, even the, you know, the episodes that I didn't like, I like, you know, the one where I think it was the gunslinger where he was with the kid and they found Fennec Shand. I found that was one of the slower ones.
Yeah.
Even that's still a great one.
Yeah. And
speaking of Fennec Shand, she, like, again, they could have used her. I mean, she is such an amazing actress and a martial artist, like, in her own rights.
Yeah.
And they could have used her to do so much more, and she is ruthless. She was just ready to do whatever it needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that her and Boba Fett just saying, you know what, we're bounty hunters, we're being benevolent now, but just wait, you cross us and all hell's going to break loose.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think they could have done so much more. And I really feel like they just missed the mark. And obviously I'm not the only one. I think we all had that memory of Boba Fett in our head, and that's what really, I mean, they, you know, I'm hoping that as time goes it's sad to say. I'm hoping as time goes by, we go back to the Boba Fett we knew and we kind of forget the one they gave us.
Like I said, I think that, like, I would love to see the Boba Fett that, you know, is, you know, he can be reasonable, but you cross him and then that badass comes out. That would be, yeah that's because you're right. In Empire Strikes Back, he was all business. He was like, you know, if he's no good to me, dead. You know, that was his famous line. You know, he didn't care about Solo. He just wanted the bounty, right?
You're right. Yeah. And he was, as I got older, I likened him to more of like a Clint Eastwood type character.
Absolutely.
Strong, silent type that was just all business and was like ruthless, like practical ruthless. Like it didn't matter to him. He didn't care if, like, it's not like he cared that Han Solo lived or died for Han Solo's sake. It was the money. It was the bounty. Exactly. I need him for this. I don't care what happens to him after I get paid, as long as I get paid. And that's what I wanted to see. That's the character. And I think in that case, you could take that character and have, I mean, we all said it on the playground as kids. Well, he'll work for either side. He just wants the money. He, even as kids, we were already working this out in our head and we just knew he was ruthless. And now they went and gave him this, like, you know, soft, like gave him a heart. There's tons of heart in Star Wars. We didn't need to get another one. I mean, I didn't want him to go all Darth Vader, but I thought, like I said, that middle ground, that ruthless, like that anti-hero, like, oh, hey, on one particular episode, he might be on your side. Another episode, you might be up against him. And absolutely. That's where I think, you know, I hope maybe they could do that. I don't know. But I do agree with you that Filoni and Favreau, if anybody can pull this back and get us back into there, it's them. Because like you said, that first episode when Boba Fett showed up.
Yeah.
That's the Boba Fett we knew. Right?
Absolutely.
That was, oh man, you know, it's like when he drops in and he starts kicking butt and we're like, wow, that was awesome. And that's what we wanted more of. And I think we got too much back the tank and.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought it was kind of cool that they, you know, they were showing some of the flashbacks and I was hoping that it would have been like a one and done. So show us what happened to him, how he got out and, you know, let's really build this up. And, you know, I know a lot of people love the Mando, the two Mando episodes. I wish they would have actually left those out and used that to build more into the Boba Fett, because I felt, just like you said, this was Mando 2.5. And I don't know. I think they were playing it safe on this one. I think, you know, I'm hoping with Obi-Wan, when that comes out, I'm hoping that they don't play it safe. I'm hoping that they do something cool with that. Ewan McGregor is an amazing actor. And I think, you know, he's got Obi-Wan down and, you know, I'm really excited to see how they're going to integrate Darth Vader in there because there's been nothing really written, about any interaction between them because, like, I read a lot of the books when I was younger, the stuff that they sort of said is no longer canon.
Right.
And there wasn't a lot.
I don't know if they're going to have any. I think what's going to happen is, like, it's going to be a lot of Vader looking for him. It doesn't mean he finds him. And I think it's going to be, you know, because if he actually found him, well, I don't know. It's like, do they have an interaction? Because according to what we know already, and this would be an interesting one, and if anybody can pull it off, it's them. But in A New Hope, the last time we saw you were, but now, you know, he gives the whole line. It's like, you were the master and I was that whole line. So that alludes to the fact that they hadn't seen each other since, you know, Obi-Wan beat him.
Absolutely. You know? And that's what I think as well, because, when he, you know, when he met him, he seemed to be like, that's the first time he's seen him since, you know, Mustafar. And he, you know, basically, you know, and I just, you know, I'm glad they brought Hayden Christensen back. I think he got a bum rap from from the movies. I mean, he was, you know, fairly young when he started that, you know, and I can only imagine what it would have been like trying to live up to Star Wars as a kid. Right. But I think, you know, he's grown as an actor and I think he can bring something to it. And obviously Ewan McGregor is an excellent actor. And he looks the part. Like when I see Ewan McGregor with his beard, he's Obi-Wan.
I know.
Right.
It's awesome. It's insane how like, I wonder, and we say this a lot in home theater, like you get something or they do something and your mind just tells you that that's what's right. Right. So like you get a new set of speakers and you're like, these sound awesome. Right. Well, is it that we just like Ewan McGregor is so good at it that we're just like, wow, it's dead on. When if you put a critical eye to it, you're like, they're not even close. But we love it so much. We want it to be real.
Well, he technically is now more Obi-Wan than Alec Guinness because he spent more time on screen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, you know, Alec Guinness had a very short part, but he was one of the iconic pieces. But it's just funny how we do that. And I mean, like, I'm just thinking, like, what are they going to do? Because there's so many things on the table. And I'm hopeful that they're not going to start de-aging everybody because I don't know if I want to see a de-aged Harrison Ford. You know, kind of in there. I mean, I like the Luke stuff. I did, you know, and I keep going back. I did like what they did with Luke in The Mandalorian, having him show up to get Grogu. And they really have gotten that de-aging down. He looked great in Boba Fett. He didn't look like he looked a bit off in the end of Mandalorian.
Well,
I don't know.
Did you hear how that worked out? What happened?
I saw the scene.
Yeah, but did you hear about the guy, the I think it was a kid, like a teenager or something, maybe early late teens, like he took that scene and he redid the deep, like, what do you call it, the deep fake or whatever?
I did hear about that.
So he put it out on YouTube and it was, he redid the that final scene of Mandalorian and he did such a good job with it, they hired him. And he's the one that ended up doing... Obviously, he's on staff, I should say. I'm sure they're not like, here you go, you got it all. But he did such a good job with that, with his version of the Mandalorian season finale that they hired him. And that's why Luke looks so much better. And my critical eye for that being in art, it's like I'm watching it and I'm seeing the tricks that they're doing to get that they can't get away with. Like, not a lot of speaking, right? Yeah. So like if he goes to talk, you're looking at the back of his head because it's just so hard to manipulate that mouth and make it look natural. Because I think there's something with, honestly, in my opinion, I think it's something with the teeth. If you got to sit them down, they're having trouble making the teeth look natural when your mouth opens and closes.
I agree. That's going to be, but I mean, they're going to get there soon. And, but like I said, I really don't want them to start de-aging all of my heroes from Star Wars. I mean, I'm happy that they're bringing that out, but I don't need to see Han Solo and Chewie, you know. And, you know, they did show a young Luke, Owen and Aunt Beru. So I think we're going to see a couple little cameos of a young Luke, but thankfully that's just another actor.
We'll have that young Luke, and I'm wondering if there's even... Well, there could be interaction because obviously in A New Hope, he knew who Obi-Wan was Ben. He knows him as Ben. He doesn't know him as Obi-Wan until A New Hope. So, of course, they're going to run into each other. They'll probably, you know, in town. We'll probably maybe get a little bit of Luke with his buddies that he ends up with battle with. Yeah. What is it? Biggs and Wedge.
Biggs and Fixer and Cammy. And actually, did you know that Fixer and Cammy were in the Book of Boba Fett in the cantina scene?
No, I didn't know that.
So I didn't know that until I watched one of those 20 things you didn't know about this. But when they were in the scene, where basically the bikers were harassing them, that was Fixer and Cammy. Yeah, so it was just a little throwback. And those are the little subtle things that Favreau and Filoni do that just say, you know, we're aware that you guys are going to notice this stuff, so we're going to throw it in there.
Yeah, yeah, It's, oh man, it's it. That's the thing, is there's so many little nuggets to that that and just like Batman. Oh, the Batman. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet. Oh. I've heard that it's really good. I'm not a massive Batman fan.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Batman. I've seen every single one, but it's not one of those things where I rush out to the movie. Same thing with Spider-Man. I waited till it came to streaming, and I actually stayed spoiler-free for that entire movie.
You did.
I had no idea. Yep. All I knew, of course, you couldn't help but know that the three Spider-Men were in it. But I didn't know the big death.
Yeah. Yeah. They're both just so good. But what I was going to say about the Batman is when you do see it, there's so many little nuggets to it. Matt Reeves did such a great job. Much like we're saying with Star Wars, I think Matt Reeves is he's the Dave Filoni for Batman, because he's so passionate about it. And you don't have to be a Batman fan to enjoy the movie. My daughter just saw the Batman this past week, and she came home and she said the same thing as me. She's like, I could have stayed for 4 hours. She's like, it was so good. It was 3 hours long, but it's not a movie that you're like, oh, when are we getting out of here? You're engaged the entire time because it's a detective story.
Yeah. Very excited. So how did you find Pattinson held up against the other Batmans? Like, is he kind of the new definitive Batman, or, you know, who's your favorite of the Batmans?
So for me, I mean, just to be quick about it, he's my favorite Batman right now. But it's because of the story. I think they've given him the best story so far, and just knowing, I mean, we just got 3 hours of a great Batman story that we've never had before in this context, meaning like the detective, right? And it's a young Bruce Wayne that he's still finding himself. So I think when all of this is said and done, when we have all three movies, supposedly there's going to be three movies of this and shows of it. But when the three movies are done, I think Pattinson. I think Pattinson will be the best Batman. And I already do like him because I think as a Batman, I think he's great, but I love the story. And I understand everybody else, but I just think this is going to be the definitive Batman.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I have to say that I think that Ben Affleck, he embodied what I thought an older Batman would look like. I liked the suit. I liked the design of the suit. And I didn't mind his acting. He kind of reminded me of the old, like when they did that callback, like, or remember the alternate scene where he's, you know, in the post-apocalyptic thing, and I thought he looked amazing.
Yes.
I thought that look, I was like, oh my God, that's the Batman that I wanted to see. And, you know, him carrying the Scar machine gun, and just, he looked like they nailed that look so well. And, you know, I did like the Bale Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, I think the standout in that was, of course, Heath Ledger's Joker. I think you'll never get that one again. And as good as Joaquin Phoenix is, he will never embody that maniacal, like Heath Ledger, just, you know.
Yeah.
Like he is, in my mind, he is the definitive Joker.
Yeah.
I did like I said, right now, until I see Pattinson, I really like the look of Ben Affleck's Batman. But my Batman, of course, is 89 Michael Keaton, because that was the first time you saw a good hero, like superhero movie that wasn't cheesy as all get out.
Right.
Because you remember, like in the 90s, we had, like, you know, Captain America with the wings on his head.
Yeah.
Like he looked like Batman. Like when I saw him the first time in the theaters, I was like, oh my, that's Batman. And that looks like a comic book. Right.
Right. And that's the thing, is we got that. That was the first black suit on stage, or on screen, I should say. It was, like you said, it was the definitive thing. It was, to me. It isn't anymore, because I go back to, I mean, you remember when Michael Keaton was cast, and there was a ton of pushback on that because he was so short. We're like, Mr. Yeah. Mom is going to be Batman? Yeah. This doesn't work.
Oh yeah.
And then when we saw it, the movie was so good. And that, so what I'm going to say to you is, like, when you see the Batman, I think Pattinson will be elevated past these people for you because of the reasons that you like all of these other Batmen, yeah, is why you're going to like Robert Pattinson's Batman. So when you said Ben Affleck, you were like, you said he just looked like that part, that scene, that this. Now, yep, imagine getting that for a three-hour, getting that Ben Affleck story, getting that post-apocalyptic story, which we know from the comics, right? Getting to see that for 3 hours.
That's going to be amazing.
But that's what I'm saying. We already are getting that with Robert Pattinson. The Batman that's that awesome. He plays for the 3 hours is basically, it's what you, it, he embodies a young version of Batman. Even like my buddy John, he doesn't like the collar, so his cape doesn't attach to his cowl. It just comes up and it has like a high collar on it. It kind of looks like Fonzie a little bit. But my buddy John doesn't like it. But I have another buddy, Martin. He's like, he sent all these pictures from young Batman that had that kind of collar. So
they really did pay attention to the source material.
Yes. And that's what I'm saying is, like, Matt Reeves, there is nothing, I have yet to find anything in this movie that isn't right out of a comic.
And that's what I love. Like, I hate it when they change up the look because they want to make it more, like, for example, Wolverine, they mm-hmm. put him in a leather suit. I want to see a short, stocky Wolverine in a jumpsuit. Mm. With his hair cut, and I want to see an X-rated Wolverine. I like not right. Logan. I want to see an X-rated Wolverine where he is Wolverine and he is ready to just do what needs to be done because that's his character. And
right.
you know, like I found that they play it so safe. Like you said, you know, they made Boba Fett nice mm-hmm. because they didn't want to turn people off. They made Wolverine less brutal. I want to see the Wolverine from the comics that has no problem killing somebody in the most brutal ways. And I understand, you know, you can't do all of that on the movies. But I mean, I would like to see some of that brutality. I want to see a comic book movie that
right.
shows that mimics the comics because that's what I grew up with. And yeah. I have it in my mind what a Wolverine movie should look like. And it's not, you know, and I think Hugh Jackman did a great job, but he's way too tall for Wolverine. You know, yeah. Wolverine's a short, stocky guy. You know, that's, you know, a complete smart ass, you know,
yeah.
doesn't care. And I'm glad that with the Batman, they're following the source material, that they're making it look like a comic book movie. And I can look like I saw that in a comic book.
Yeah, there's stuff in there that, I mean, I don't know everything. I read Batman growing up, but I don't know it like other people do. And more people, what I'm finding is anybody that says, oh, I don't like that part. And somebody will be like, well, that comes from this, this, and this. And you're like, oh, okay. So that's what I mean. Like, I've yet to have somebody point out something in the movie that isn't comic accurate and say that I don't understand that. And then, but there's always here, it comes right from here. So the story is based on multiple stories of Batman. All of the characters are based off of, you know, their costumes, they're this, they're that. They're all based off of Batman lore right out of the comic books. And it just, I can't wait for the disc. I honestly can't. I'm like 3 hours. And I said, like my daughter, I'm like, I want more. I want an extended version, but the movie is so good. I don't know how you could do an extended version because they gave you everything.
That's I'm glad that they didn't do what they did Snyder and basically say you have to make this fit this mold so we can sell it to the masses. They're like, if you need 3 hours to make a movie, here's your 3 hours. Because like, for example, Dune was I think they did a great job with Dune, and they didn't really hold his hand and say, you know, you have to keep to this certain length. They're like, do what you need to do to make sure this story is told properly. So that it engages with the audience and it stays faithful to the source material, but without, you can't go down the Frank Herbert rabbit hole in a few hours. Like, that's something that really needs to be told. But I think they did a great job. Like, I'm really impressed with how they're doing, you know, these longer movies that are really telling a good story, and they're not cutting them back, because I don't mind a 3-hour movie. Like, I want to sit down and I want to have a good, engaged movie. And, you know, that's a great thing with the home theater. I can put it on pause if I need to go use the washroom or refill my drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know about you, but I find myself, you know, I there are very few movies that are really dragging me out of my home theater right now to go see. Like, before, it was like, I want to go see this in the theaters, but now I'm getting such a great experience in my own home theater. I'm like, you know what? I want to watch that at home.
Right. But I will tell you, did you hear my podcast on Friday with
I'm a bit behind on all my podcasts.
Okay. Well, he had just seen Spider-Man No Way Home, and he didn't see it in the movies, and I didn't even mention it to him in the podcast, but I want to say it here. And this is the reason that we all should get back to the theaters, is because the reason we love our theaters in our homes is because of the theaters, right?
Absolutely.
It's our memories of going to the theater. For me in particular, going with my dad and stuff, right? I always say that, like Star Wars, and that is the foundation of the hobby for me, right? It's where it all started, and I'm just constantly trying to duplicate what you got in the theater. So I think we're starting to get, as home theater people and what's gone on the last 2 years, we're starting to get a little spoiled, and that we're like, hey, we can just stay in here. We're not hermits. We're home theater people that love going. We love the cinema experience. And if we stop going, we're going to miss out on moments like what happened in No Way Home. And when I watched it again in my theater, I saw it in the theater opening night, packed theater, as packed as it can be with the, you know, restrictions, but it was a packed theater. And that first scene with Andrew Garfield and everybody like clapping and cheering and going crazy, it was awesome. Even though we all knew, like my buddy John's like, I knew it was coming. I knew it. I go, yeah. No kidding. We all knew it was coming because they've told you that these characters would be there and blah, blah. And we all speculated. But when he showed up and that room went nuts, it was awesome. And I remembered that. And I'm sitting in my theater by myself going, nobody's cheering. And it was, it wasn't sad because I had the memory, but people that didn't go to the theater and didn't get to experience that when they watch it at home, yeah, they're excited and you get to see it. But we need to get back so that we can experience those memories and experience it with like a bunch of people, so that when we go back to our theaters, that's what rejuvenates our theaters. That's what makes it. I swear I heard people cheering in my room because I had that memory.
Yeah, the most memorable ones that I see when people cheer were, I remember The Force Awakens, after that many years without Star Wars, and the logo comes up and you hear the fanfare, everybody was cheering then. And I went on opening night, of course, for Force Awakens, because I could not. And that was amazing. And then I remember we got a huge cheer when you saw Han Solo for the first time.
Yep.
Right. That was a huge piece. And then of course, when Han died, it was like, you could hear a pin drop. Like, everybody's right. Yeah.
Yep. And that's what like going to a theater and having the cheers, but also, like we say all the time in home theater, like, silence is just as important. It, you know, when your speakers go completely silent, that's just as important. And when that room goes silent and you're like, oh my, like, everybody's feeling the exact, you can feel what everybody's feeling. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was amazing. And, you know, I did go to see Bond in the theaters, and I saw Dune in the theaters, because I really thought that those required it. And it was unfortunate because the Omicron outbreak, that had kind of what's kept us from the theaters, because I would have went to see Star Wars, and it's just getting back to normal here where I would think about going back to a theater.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to go see some movies this summer in the theaters. Cause you're right. It's a great experience to go in. Plus the popcorn's so much better at the theater.
Yeah. And it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I don't know about you, but
it's
food expensive. Costs far more than the tickets now for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's yeah.
But you guys are spoiled. I don't have any of those like I've got an IMAX theater. So I live in a small province in Canada. So we don't have the population to drive like anything more than an IMAX theater. So we don't have a Dolby Atmos or a Dolby Vision. Like we have nothing.
Yeah.
And you know, so there's like in my city, there are maybe four like major theaters that you can go to, and they're just sort of all spread out. But there's nothing that I would consider that meets the quality of my home theater as far as, you know, object-based surround and stuff like that. And, you know, the only one that I think that is decently calibrated is the IMAX, because I think they have standards that you need to meet. But the rest of it, you know, the base is muddy or the surrounds are just, you know, mixed far too hot. So, you know, it really takes you out of it when, you know, you can hear something just plain as day that shouldn't be, you know, subtle, just in your ear. And I, you know, I wish they would get some Dolby Atmos and some Dolby Cinemas here and bring that, because I would love to see something, you know, in a Dolby Cinema, a proper one.
Yeah.
You know, action packed. That would be amazing.
Yeah, it's even where I am, I have a decent theater that I go to here. It's a Showcase Cinema Deluxe. It's the I always forget what the name of the actual theater, but they only have one. It's a 14 screen, you know, Cineplex, but they only have one with Dolby Atmos and a nice, it's got the biggest screen in the building and all that. But even that, even with Atmos in those buildings, it's not even, I've been to Dolby Cinemas and those sound great. I think where the biggest advantage in a Dolby Cinema or even in a well done IMAX with IMAX sound, because that I guess that's what they call it. It's I think the biggest advantage to those is the bass. You get you get better bass. I think in a large room like that, it's very difficult to pull off the surround sound effect that we get in our theaters, right?
Absolutely.
Because you could be sitting anywhere. It's like it's very difficult to get the same effect. I mean, you can get it. And like I said, when I saw the Batman, I mean, I got the feels. I got the idea of the sound moving around the room, but you know, like what we do is in our rooms, it's basically you go into these theaters and you're like, all right, that's going to be even better when I hear it in my room, because it's going to be more localized to that side. And this is going to go over here. So you're already gauging. That's what we're using the theaters for. It's, I mean, for the content purposes, but getting back to like what I said, I'm like, I want the environment of the big crowd, but the content, I'm already thinking, wow, in my room, this is going to be great coming from over here. And there's some fantastic scenes in the Batman that, that for surround sound that I think it's going to be a demo disc, almost like Pacific Rim. I don't know if you saw the, YouTube video I retweeted from Dolby where they sat down with Matt Reeves and the sound team. And they went over every, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't see this until afterwards, but when you see it, once you've seen the movie, definitely watch that YouTube video, because it's Matt Reeves tells you all about like what he did to get the movie, to be able to do it. And like what you were saying before about like how like, oh, they do what you want, like on screen, and how Zack Snyder had all this, you know, I don't know, pushback, like, I want to do this. And they wouldn't let him. Well, Matt Reeves tells a story. They called him in to do Batman, and it was supposed to be the Affleck one. Yep. And he basically said, he goes, that's not the Batman I want to do. Thank you very much. But he kind of was turning him down. And then they're like, and he thought he was just going to be leaving the meeting. And they go, well, what Batman do you want to do? And he was like, all right, here we go. And he told them, and that's what we ended up getting. So they, you know what I mean? So they allowed him, but he actually didn't want to do the Ben Affleck one. And he, I mean, he explains it a lot better, but there was a lot of that. But then they go in the rest of the video. It's like an hour and a half long, and it's all talking about all the different sounds, all the things they did, the Batmobile sounds, all of that. And it's, I mean, it's just, that video is almost like home theater porn, because you're just like listening, and it's put out by Dolby, of course, but it's so good. And that's
why I love the fact that directors are now thinking about not only the vision, because before it was all about the cinematic vision. So this is how I want to frame my shot. This is what I want it to look like. And sound was always an afterthought. And now they're thinking about, how am I going to frame this shot with the sound? Because they have all this technology, and they can do so much, and they can say, well, I can make this as lifelike as possible. And you know, that's the cool thing. When you're in your home theater and something happens and you look behind you because you think someone's behind you. Or, you know, I remember the first time I played Top Gun in my theater, and you have jets whizzing all around you, and my buddy ducked because he was just one of those things where he felt the need to duck. That was the cool part. I was like, okay, so this is, you know, pure theater porn for us. Cause you know, you are seeing somebody. And that's the thing is, I don't know about you, but I'm the only one in my group of friends that's really passionate about home theater and music and all this stuff. And, you know, they laugh because I have CDs again, and I've got I just got a record player and all that stuff. And they're like, you know, this is hilarious. You know, I can't believe you're kind of going retro. And now all of a sudden we had a listening session with the record player. And they were like, oh my God, like, we just sat down, we put the record on, and there was no flipping to the next song. It was just, we listened to the record the whole way through. You flip it over, and it was 1 hour of music uninterrupted. Yeah. We weren't like, hey, what's up next on streaming? Hey, it's your choice. It was just, we sat down and we, you know, had a couple of whiskey sours, and it was an amazing experience. And I told him, I said, this is why I got back into physical media, because it reminds me of an earlier time when I first got into home theater, and I've always been into home theater and hi-fi. It was a simpler time. You would look forward to going to, HMV or Sam the Record Man and getting your next DVD or your next CD. Mm. And, and it's cool. I'm going back and I'm buying records again, and it's amazing. I love it. And, you know, does it sound as good as streaming? No. Like, obviously, a record, it's vinyl, it's analog. But damn if it doesn't sound awesome. Like, everybody, I prefer the sound of vinyl. And I know, objectively, it doesn't have the dynamic range that my CD does or my streaming platform has. But we prefer the sound.
It's that sound that you had when you were a kid. Yeah. You know, I remember the first time I put a record on in my bedroom as a kid, and just a young kid, and my parents gave me a record player for Christmas. And I remember it was, of all albums, it was like, Elvis Presley Gold. And I'm like, I remember putting it on, and you just hear that and you were like, and I just remember being amazed looking at the speaker. And then, did you ever do this as a kid? Like, look at the record and like look in the grooves and be like, how is that working? You know what I mean? And it just, the amazement that you had as a kid. It's like, I remember you'd take it off, you'd put it on, listen to it, talk to pull it off again, look at it and be like, how is it? And then as you grew up, you learned about it. And this was our first introduction to technology, probably. For most of us. And it's like the way the needle ticks on these little bumps inside these grooves is making the speakers do what, and it has to go through why. And it was like, that was amazing to me. And then, but then just putting the record, every time you put that needle down and you just heard that noise, and then the song starts playing, and doesn't it almost feel like the music's gotten too good, where when you're just listening to music, it's like, when did it ever sound like that? Because when we were kids, we listened to records, right? That's what we started with. When you go and see somebody live, it doesn't sound that good.
No.
What are we reproducing? It never sounds like that.
And you're right. And it's so clean. Like, you know, almost, you know, I really prefer, like, I do listen to a whole, you know, a lot of genres of music. You know, I grew up with rock and roll with my dad. So Led Zeppelin, Steppenwolf, all that stuff. So I still have a huge affinity for that. I'm probably one of the biggest Clapton fans, you know. And, you know, I still tend to listen to that stuff. And the poppy stuff that's out today, I'll listen to it to work out. But you're right. It sounds so perfect because, you know, I'm you know, when I listen to it, I'm like, is that a real drum beat or is that synthesized in a beat machine?
Right.
You know, is that a real guitar player? Right. And that's why, you know, I prefer, you know, people that I know are like Chris Stapleton, who I know is playing guitar. I love that kind of sound and whatnot. And, you know, the one thing that the pandemic has done, because when I was young, I listened to a ton of music. Like that's the one thing that my roommate and I would always do. We always had a hi-fi system. We had hand-me-down couches and, you know, we ate, you know, mac and cheese and hot dogs, but we had a high-end hi-fi system in our apartment, and we would listen to music for hours on end. And then at some point, I stopped consuming music like that, and it just became, you know, when I was working out, you know, I started listening to podcasts when I was driving. So I could see my music consumption going down, and I was so much into home theater. And then the pandemic hit, and I started slowly getting back into music and slowing down because couldn't go visit friends. So,
right.
You know, let's go throw a record on or let's go throw a CD on. And like I said, I've gone down the physical media rabbit hole for sure. You know, I have probably 300 CDs in my room now. And of those I just got over the last year. And the great thing about CDs is they're still super cheap. So you can I bought an entire collection of CDs for $60.
Oh, wow. People just unloading them.
Yeah, like there was a guy, like he was moving and he had a lifetime. He was he was a musician and he had an entire room filled with CDs. And he said, he had like multiple copies. So he had like, you know, the UK copy, the this version, the that version. So he was selling off all his duplicates. So I was able to get, you know, a really respectable number of CDs for next to nothing. And he just wanted to clear out his room. And had I been into vinyl at the time, he was clearing out his vinyl, and I kicking myself now because I could have got, because he obviously took care of his stuff. They were immaculate. So, you know, it's just been a really, you know, a lot of fun getting back into that.
Well, that's, yeah, I am getting close though. I haven't gotten the bug to get back into vinyl yet, but I am getting close, and I have a feeling in the next couple of years, we're planning to do an addition on the house and put a big, like, great room on there. Under that is going to be the new theater in the basement. But with that bigger room, living space, I picture myself adding a good record player, some stuff up there just to, because again, the reason we're doing the addition is the kids are moving out. It's funny. Everybody's like, you guys are down. You should be downsizing. Your kids are leaving. What are you adding more onto your house for? Well, we want a bigger, greater room for the kids to bring the grandkids over. Right. Absolutely. And have Christmases in this big, great room, you know, or big, great room for us. And when I was a kid, we used to have like a Thanksgiving. It was a tradition in our house. Like we'd have Thanksgiving dinner. And then that's when we broke out the Christmas records right after dinner. So like Christmas, Thanksgiving night, we played the Muppets Christmas album. Right. And then, and other Christmas albums they just put on. And that I totally see myself getting back into vinyl for that. Like you were saying, that warm, and I always call it warm, and I don't know, a lot of people do, but it's like, it's not warm, it's just what we call it, right? But I think it's because of the warm feelings we get. But
well, it's warm because it's the lack of dynamic range, so it feels warmer. Like, so obviously,
so that would mean dynamic range is cold.
Well, I guess it's more clinical,
right? Yeah.
So I think that's what it is. And you know, and what I'll say though is, I've been working with Tom, as you know, doing some articles, and Monoprice was nice enough to send me over one of their new monolith tables. And you know what? They're not expensive. They're $250, and it comes with an Audio Technica, I want to say an 1895 cartridge on it, which is a really good elliptical cartridge. So, you know, it's obviously a beginner cartridge. It's kind of entry level. But I'll tell you, I don't know if I would recommend for the casual listener to go much more than that, because you can go down that rabbit hole real quick. And, you know, I was looking at cartridges that, you know, are $1,000. And I have to think, realistically, how much better is a $1,000 cartridge from a $100 cartridge? And what am I getting? And do I even have the gear to push that? Because I still, I've got the Onkyo now. So I use the Onkyo. I don't have a dedicated two-channel setup. And honestly, I consider myself an audio enthusiast, not an audiophile. And I don't think that you need, you know, $10,000 speakers and a Macintosh amp and all this stuff to you know, have good music. I think that a lot of that stuff is prestige and just, you know, wanting to have that. And I've yet to be able to hear a difference between, like, my Denon and my Onkyo sound exactly the same. Same thing with Drac versus, you know, Odyssey. I really don't notice a massive difference.
So you're right. And I will, here's where the difference is though. And I haven't experienced obviously Macintosh amps and $10,000 speakers, but what I've come to realize in home theater is that, and I got to imagine it's the same thing. So the higher you go in price in almost anything, right? It's the dividends get, you know, diminished drastically, right? Absolutely. So in home theater, if you go from $1,000 projector to a $5,000 projector, you're probably getting a pretty big jump there. But going from a $5,000 projector to a $20,000 projector, it's not as big of a jump. It's going to be minor differences, most likely, right? But what ends up happening is when you do an A-B, if you put stuff side by side, like you said, and I agree with you, there's very little difference, but there is a difference. And where the difference shows up is it's over time. It's over time of experiencing these things over and over, and your ear becomes attuned to this stuff. So say you are a person that had the Macintosh amps, a $1,000 cartridge, and $10,000 speakers. Yeah, that's to you. You listen to that for a couple of years and then go back to a lower system, you're going to hear the difference. You're going to notice it. And us people that live in the lower end, we're all like, there's no difference because, well, you're right. Side by side, going back and forth, it's a minor difference, so it's very hard to tell, but it is there, and it's over time where you experience stuff over and over and over, and then go backwards. Go back to the systems that we used to have in our theaters, and it's like you look back at it now, and you'd be like, oh my God, it's not as big. But do you understand what I'm saying? Do you get that?
I do. You know, and if Macintosh wants to hook me up with an amplifier for a long-term loan, I'm all for that.
Right. And that's the hard part is like, you have to get there. And that's what I said it the other day. And I'm going to be saying it come Friday when I'm talking about the Kaleidoscape. And I'm saying like a lot of this stuff, it's when you demo stuff, it's so important to demo it in your environment. When you go and you demo stuff other places, that's not your environment, not your chain of command, not your chain of equipment. And when you add stuff in, that's when you realize you're like, oh, okay, I see the improvement it did here, as opposed to you go someplace and you watch somebody else's entire system and go, wow, that was awesome. Well, how do I duplicate that? Well, you got to duplicate the room as well. You've got to, you know, there's so much that goes into it. But when you add something to your system, it really shows you the benefits of that piece. And I got to imagine, like you said, with a cartridge, $1,000 going from $100 to $1,000. If you haven't upgraded everything else in your system, you might not really notice the difference because you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? So if you still have regular speakers and you know, and a regular amp, then you're right. You're not, you know, it's like putting high test in a, you know, an 89 Ford Escort. Well, okay, it's not going to make it any better. It's like, it's still an Escort and it's still, you know, it's all right. So, but yeah, it's, you know what we need to do, Andrew?
What's that?
I need to introduce you.
Ah.
That's, I'm joking. I mean, yes, and I've never thought it would be more important but that's what I love, how these things have evolved. This is exactly what I want out of this Takeover Tuesday podcast. I want great conversations, just sitting down with people and talking, and not the, I don't know. I have two Andrews in a row. We have Andrew from Canada this week, and I had Andrew last week, and I love just like, we don't have to do the open. We don't, I mean, you know, it's in the show titles, right? It's like you clicked on the podcast. So just two guys hanging out, or two people. If anybody, any females out there want to come on. But yeah, Andrew, thank you for coming on Takeover Tuesday, Brightside Home Theater. And, it's just fantastic. We're introducing you. We're almost an hour in.
Excellent.
I will say, I don't know if this got recorded at the beginning, Andrew, like all of my listeners, everybody's very excited to come on. And that's, I hate to say it this way, but it's rejuvenating my love of sitting down here. But I hate to say it that way because I've never lost the love of sitting down here to talk home theater. It's just, it's boosted it. Let's say that. That might be even topical for what's going on in the world. I've been boosted, guys. And I've been recording these Sunday mornings. And I cannot wait to sit down with people on Sunday mornings and just talk home theater. It comes out on Tuesday. And Andrew, thank you for coming on.
No problem.
We have a lot more to talk about. Yes. You heard Andrew mention he is writing for Tom. That is Tom from AV Rant. And he writes for, what is it? Cord? No, not Cord Cutters. Duh.
AV Gadgets.
AV Gadgets. Sorry, Tom. But all the crap he gives me, I think I can give a little back. No. Yeah, AV Gadgets. And Andrew's writing over there. And I love hearing them talk about you over on AV Rant, about like how you're learning so much more. And Tom has said, like, you've streamlined your systems. You've learned all about like cables and stuff like that. I think it's fantastic. So I'm excited to get it firsthand from you, because you know what? They really should have had you on their podcast to talk about your experiences, but you know what? I'll step up.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think I used to do a lot of writing on Reddit, and you know, the home theater subreddit and things like that. And I just, I stopped sort of responding to a lot of stuff because there was so much misinformation being given for certain things. And I was like, you know what? It's difficult because you're one voice amongst many. Right. And so, you know, I approached Tom and said, hey, you know, how about I try to write for you? And, you know, he basically said, you know, can you write? And I sent him some stuff and he's like, yeah, you can write. Let's do this. And, you know, I told him, I said, I don't want anything, for this. It's for fun. It keeps my mind going. And, you know, it's one of those things where I was starting to lose the bug for home theater, and it rejuvenated me just like you to just, you know, take another look at it and to do some different stuff and, you know, to be able to help people. And, you know, I think Tom and I have very much a similar writing style, very sarcastic. We can poke fun at the home theater group, because you know how serious we can get about our stuff.
Oh yeah.
As a group of hobbyists go, you know, we are very passionate about, you know, our stuff and very set in our ways in some stuff. So it's been fun to write, and of course getting some of the different, like, you know, I got to test out one of the new Monolith subwoofers, one of the version 2s. Amazing piece of kit that is. And of course, now I've got a monolith turntable that I'm testing out, and I've got a sofa baton. Did you back the X1?
No, I didn't. I didn't get one because I'm not sure the direction I'm going in. And I was thinking of actually, because I knew I'd eventually be getting the Kaleidoscape, I was thinking of actually going to, getting out of that and moving up to a, you know, something that can control more of the high, like a Control 4 or something like that. So I bought, when Harmony did their thing, I bought a second Harmony that I just have sitting there in case mine fails. But I didn't plan on going any further with that style, let's just say. So that's why I didn't back that one. But from what I understand, it's supposed to be pretty good. Have you gotten yours yet?
Not yet. It's shipped. Okay. I got it because of the website. I said, you know what? It'll make for a good article. Plus I want to do a month long, you know, test to sort of see, you know, if it is the new heir apparent to Harmony. And I don't, from what I've heard, is there's still a lot of bugs, but they're working on them.
Right.
But you know, we'll see. And I you know what? I don't suspect that Harmony's going to stop their support for a long time because they still, what was it? Was it the sling box or their squeeze box?
Yes. It's so funny. You're saying exactly what Brett said on Friday's podcast. So Brett used to work there and work for Harmony or Logitech. And I asked him flat out, I'm like, what's the story here? What's going on? What do you think? And he had some really great insight to why another company wouldn't buy it. Why we may not want another company to buy Harmony and let it be the way it is right now. Because, I'll let you listen to that. But he has a lot of good insight into it and it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of business sense. He doesn't foresee it going away. They're still supporting it and, you know, updates to it. We're just not getting new product, but the Harmony still works great. So, and that's one of the, and like you were saying about the sofa baton and the bugs, and it's like, I love all that stuff, right? I love tinkering. If I didn't have this podcast and I was just me by myself in my home, I probably would have bought one. I probably would have signed up and I would have tinkered. But because of this podcast, and my podcast is about the experiences, right? And I like to do, that's what I kind of want to focus on. I honestly steered away from that because I knew that if I got one, I would just be like, that would be my podcast. And I know AV Rant's going to do one. You guys, you're doing one for the website. I know HT guys are doing it. There's plenty of people talking about that. I don't need to do it. I don't think I'm going to bring anything extra to the listeners by me doing it as well. So I was like, you know what? That's another reason to stay away because I'm already like not overwhelmed, but very busy just trying to do experiences. So I could stay away from that.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I'm excited to try it. I don't think that they'll hit the refinement of Harmony because Harmony, when it first came out, was janky. And it took them, you know, quite a few refreshes to finally get to where they are. And if they continue to support that for the foreseeable future, I'm happy with that. And I think, you know, I wrote an article for Tom about, you know, is it a good idea to buy a Harmony? And I still support people going out and getting a used Harmony. Don't pay, you know, scalper prices for it. Like it's not all of a sudden, it's not a collector's item. So I wouldn't, you know, pay somebody $300 for one, but if somebody, you know, was selling one for a decent price, I say pick it up and use it, and it'll be a great addition to your home theater. Like, honestly, I think the Harmony is the one thing that got my wife into home theater because it makes it so easier for her to come down and turn stuff on.
Yep.
And it's not that she's not, you know, tech savvy. It's just that, you know, turning the inputs and, you know, having five different remotes to do one thing is a pain in the butt for most people.
Right.
We're a special breed of people because we don't care about that, but you know, having a single remote that does everything and just, you know, you can do your stuff.
Yeah.
That really made it huge. And then of course I added the Google Home, which is awesome because you can now just say, hey, Google, turn on the Plex or whatever. And it turns everything on and sets everything correctly. So that level of automation is really what makes it just so amazing for to get people into this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really does. And that's what I said the other day talking with Brett about the Harmony. I'm like, it has a help button. You know, it's like that was I had a Philips, I think it was touchscreen remote when I first built my theater, and I could put the buttons on with the computer. I had to connect it to the computer. I could design it. You actually had to program all of the commands to it. So you took all of your remotes and you'd set them up and at your computer. And I thought it was great. This was like 2001, 2002. I was doing this.
And that was next level.
Yeah. Back then it was like, so you took your receiver remote, volume up, and you'd program volume up. Okay. That's that button. And then I could draw them and design the buttons in Photoshop and do all that. The volume buttons were actually hard buttons at the bottom. I think that was the only two buttons it had on it at the bottom was that. Maybe there were two more for like up and down for channels or something. But everything else was all programmed, and you could put specific, I don't think this one had colors. It was like a kind of a greenish monochromatic computer-like screen.
That makes sense for that
right.
kind of time frame.
But you could tone the color. Right, the green. So you could have different tones of green in there, like darker, lighter, brighter, whatever. And you could write inside the button what each button was. That was great. But if you didn't hit that button just perfectly right, it might send, you know, oh, go to, you know, put on DVD player, and it would change everything. It would do everything like what a Harmony did, but you had to program it yourself. But when then somebody went in the room and hit on, if not everything hit at the same time, it was like, okay, now which one? You know what I mean? So like yeah. Harmony came out with the help button is like, is everything playing right? No. Okay. What isn't playing? And it did the walkthrough. It basically did everything that we would do as the home theater owner. When somebody said, hey, your system's not playing right. When you get home, can you help me now? And I'd be on the phone with my wife going, okay, what isn't playing? And I was basically, I was saying everything that Harmony ended up saying on their remote, which was, it's perfect.
Yeah. I've been there, done that. My wife texts me, the Apple TV's not working. What's going on? All right, we'll try this. Try that. Mm-hmm. Try something else.
Right. Yeah. Have you thought of reading a book?
<It's> like, I said that many times. I'm just like, I can't figure it out without being there. So wait till right. I come home and I'll fix it up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, but the, getting with the Harmony, using the Harmony, I just spent probably like an hour and a half, 2 hours yesterday, had a ball going back and forth from my theater to the computer and programming different buttons on my Harmony for the Kaleidoscape, because it's like, there's buttons in there that don't automatically come up on the Harmony app. So you have, yeah. but you can go in on the computer on their website, or not on the website, but on their app that you have on the computer itself, and see all the available buttons that you have and be like, huh, what does this do? But they're labeled weird. You're like, what does that mean? And I'm like, there's a replay button, right? And I was like, huh. So I programmed it onto the Harmony. I'd have to upload it, go into the room and hit it and see what it did. And I was like, oh, cool. It actually has, I think it's not 5 seconds. I think it's like a 3 second reverse button. Oh, so nice. It actually jumps. I was so happy I found it, because that's great for when I'm doing my podcast, my reviews of the movies. I can get to that scene quicker and then it really tune it. Okay, I want to start right here and just make boop, 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 and go right back. So that was kind of cool. But there were a whole bunch of other buttons too that I can do to just to work myself through the system, which is all it's super intuitive if you use the app on your phone, but or use their remote. But using the Harmony remote, I really got it dialed in, and I actually found some extra buttons that aren't even on. That's not even on the phone, that replay button. So I thought that was pretty cool. But that's kind of next level stuff for most people with Harmony. A lot of people don't get into all of even that stuff, but that's what makes Harmony great, is that people like us can really tinker with it. But it's also super simple for the guy that just wants to come home, or the person that just wants to come home and just be like, okay, here are all my stuff. Boom. Okay. Now it's doing everything for me. Done.
Yeah. like I said, Harmony is just one of those products that has just works, and it makes it so much more convenient. And of course, where I have a lot of older stuff now, like CD players and stuff like that, and people have lost their remotes, it's great that they have all of that stuff. So I can easily control all of my stuff with a single remote.
Mm, right. Oh yeah. That's the idea, to get rid of that clutter on the coffee table. All right. Let me ask you this though, with everything that you've done, what's probably the biggest revelation, you've experienced since writing for Tom?
I would think that, needing every single product on the market. So, at one point I had an external amp and I had a DAC and I had a CD player and I had a this, I had a that, I had multiples of stuff. Just because I read that it will make it that much better. And then, I slowly started looking and saying, okay, so I sit 7 feet away from my speakers. So do I actually need an external amplifier that has 125 watts per channel to make these things loud? And, and the good thing is I'm really skilled at the whole buy and sell for you stuff. So all the stuff that I had, with the exception of my OLED and my receiver, were all used. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get a great deal on it. But, it was like, do I really need to have this external amp? And, I disconnected and I didn't notice any significant difference with how my speaker sounded. So I said, okay, so that's obviously not doing something. And then, I did the DAC and my wife sat down and did some A-B-ing with me and, she couldn't hear any difference. And, I had to be honest, I didn't hear a whole lot of difference. And the only thing it really added was a cool factor by having all these components. But then I tried to do some wire management and I realized I had so many components in there and so many wires that it was a mess. And, do I really need, all these different things? So I've pretty much streamlined it. I've got a single CD player, an old Pioneer Elite that I got for free, which it's an awesome piece of kit. I've got a Monster power conditioner, because, I think everybody needs a good surge protector. I've got the Onkyo and I've got an Aircom, the AC Infinity.
Yep.
And I've got obviously the record player. I've got an NVIDIA. I got rid of the Apple TV. I just kept the NVIDIA Shield because that does everything I needed to do. And I've got the Xbox Series X for some gaming.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. You can streamline big time. And like you said, you don't need all that extra stuff. Or even like the external amps. We were raised on the idea of this is what's better. So it's hard to get it out of your mind because
I think it made
it's
sense
not based in fact though.
well, it made sense for us, I think, because, because in the original, early days before they had all the integrated receivers, if you wanted to buy a new processor, that was the cheapest piece. So you just go went and got a new processor, but I did the math. If you wanted to go buy a pre-pro and even if you wanted to go just say 9 channels of amplification, the actual pre-pro, I looked at the Marantz and the Denon pre-pros. They're more expensive than the comparable AVR. And, the feature-wise, they have no amplifiers and they do exactly the same thing. So it just doesn't make sense when I can buy, the AVR and have it do everything it needs. And again, I have a very small room compared to most. I have a 13 by 21 foot room. I sit 7 feet away from my screen. So my speakers are even closer. Like I can almost reach out and touch my speakers. So I have a very, very, like it's meant for my wife and I. And, I have a well-treated room. I think treating my room is probably the best thing I've ever done.
Yes.
With the acoustic treatments. And, so I don't need a ton of power. I think I did the calculations. I use 3 or 4 watts to get to reference volume.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's funny. It really is. And I think when it comes to like separate versus a receiver, if the only time I can justify separates to me from what in what I've experienced is that when you get to the next level of price point where so what I'm trying to like in my head, I'm trying to explain it. But so like if you have say you have $4,000 to spend on your receiver slash separates or whatever. If you can spend $4,000, get a receiver for $4,000, it's going to be pretty much equal to any separate system you can buy for $4,000, right? Yep. And it, that's the thing. It's like you're not getting an improvement, I don't think, at that particular price point. That's how good receivers are. They've come a long way from what we knew 30 years ago. Where I think you need to get into separates is when you get into like the Trinovs or Anthems and stuff where you're spending $10,000 on your one on a single piece. And now you need amplification for that piece because what the improvements you're getting there are the adjustments you can make. I don't even know if they call it room correction, but the things that I've seen and experienced with Trinov and doing the demos and other and Anthems and stuff, there's so much more. And there's a value to that. It's outside of our reach, but there is a value to that. And that the only way to get there is to go to separates. But if you're coming back to, you know, amplification, you know, separate amplification for your same $4,000 system, you can get it because it looks cool. And like Tom says all the time, Tom and Rob say all the time, like, hey, by all means, if you want that, then do that. But don't be expecting to be doing that because you're going to say, well, I hear such a big difference because there probably isn't one. And I haven't experienced this, but they're, you know, Tom and Rob, I don't know if they've experienced it or they're speculating, but they've said like there's, I think Rob has said like objectively, there's a point where some of the receivers are actually better than the same set of separates, right?
Yep.
So
I mean, it makes sense because there's so much, you know, like I mean, my amplifier was from 1996, I think. So it was well and truly vintage. And you know, and that's the other thing too, is that I find that I don't know if I really want to drop a bunch of money into modern electronics because I don't think it has the longevity that stuff used to have. I don't, you know, like I don't know how long I'll use my Onkyo for before I'll need something else. Like who knows what the next big thing is.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, you know, this one has, you know, HDMI 2.1 and my OLED has 2.1. So there's nothing really compelling me to change right now because I have all the features I need. I've got DTS, I've got, you know, I've got Atmos, I've got all the codecs I need.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's really coming up that's going to, you know, force me for the next few years. But like I said, I just don't know how long that's going to last for. Because in my experience, a lot of electronics now, computers, stuff like that, they start, you know, dying in the 5 to 6 year mark. You know, and same thing with my, you know, I've got a 12-year-old Samsung television that's still going. And it was, you know, one of the first LEDs or, you know, in the early. And I'm just wondering how long is my OLED going to last for? Like, is that going to be, am I going to have my OLED for 10 years or am I going to be looking in 5 years to say this is starting to look washed out or it's starting to dim? Do I need to replace my OLED?
Right. Yeah. It's, I wanted to get into that whole, you went to an Onkyo because that's what I had before my current Denon. And I bought that. I bought my Onkyo when Atmos first came. I had an Onkyo before that. All right. So I owned two Onkyos in a row. But the second one I bought when Atmos came out, it was the first, you know, receiver to have Atmos. It was before DTSX. And I couldn't wait to get it. So I was like an early adopter, bought that one right away. And I've said this on the podcast before. I had a guy come out to the house. I'm like, how can I upgrade? I was thinking upgrading speakers. And he's like, you need to get this receiver. And he said it was the Denon that I got. It was a huge upgrade to me in sound and everything. And I, at the time, I had a 5-channel amplifier. He's like, you don't need that. Just run it off of this. And Odyssey was huge Onkyo had nothing at the nothing compared to that at the time. But from everything I'm understanding, Onkyo's really stepped up and their new receivers are really good. And I'd love to hear how you went from Denon to Onkyo and what that experience is like and how much better that is.
Well, so here's what I'll say. So my Denon, I had an X3600 and it just all of a sudden it died.
Really?
Yep. And it's still under warranty. So I called Denon and within 5 minutes I had an RMA to get it repaired. But of course, being a home theater nerd, I couldn't be a month or two without an AVR. And I got the Denon on a crazy blowout sale a few years ago. So you know what I said to my wife, I said, I can sell it for probably close to what I paid for it. And you know, and I talked to Rob and I said, you know, right now there's not a whole lot in stock because of the pandemic. And right. They had one 7100 in stock. I wanted to get the RZ50. I think that was the model number. They're one with the pre-outs.
Okay.
And they didn't have They said you'll get it in June. So I said, well, I need a receiver now, and I don't want to pay. You know, and of course Canadian prices are crazy. So I think the RZ50 is like $2,000 plus taxes here. So I said that's a bit much for features I'm not going to need. So I got the 7100, and I also said, you know what? I want to try Dirac. And, you know, everybody's saying that Dirac is the next big thing and that it's so much better than Odyssey. And, you know, honestly, it's much harder to use than Odyssey. I have the UMic 1, and with Dirac, you have to set all of your levels yourself. So if you set your speaker level too high, it clips and it starts over. If you set it too low, it doesn't pick it up and it starts it over. So at least with Odyssey, the automation is so much better. You just, you know, set it and forget it. Now, of course, with Dirac, I can measure, I don't know, I think 23 positions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it probably has a lot of, you know, accuracy there. But overall, I'm really happy with it. I think it's a great receiver. I would totally recommend it. I'm hoping that their quality control is better because I heard that the older Onkyos had some HDMI issues. And that would be one of the first things that went on were HDMI boards. But, you know, this got a 2-year warranty, so hopefully I won't need to use that. Build quality seems really high. They've really stepped up their game there. It doesn't look like a cheap receiver. It looks, you know, like a quality receiver, you know, good parts, good fit and finish. I've got it mated up with the AC Infinity, so that way it won't get hot at all. That's the big thing, is I said, you know what? I'm going to put that on it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
So that way it will never get hot. I don't think it gets over 80 degrees ever. I think that's the hottest I've ever seen it.
Really?
So, I've got the fan to sit. Yeah, I've got the fan to and well, I don't listen at reference volume because I am so close to my speakers, and because my room is so well treated, reference volume can be deafening. So, you know, there are a couple of movies, like Pacific Rim is one of those movies where you have to crank it, right? And it's funny that you said that, because that's one of my daughter's favorite movies to watch in my home theater. I don't know how many times we've seen Pacific Rim.
Oh, I said, did you hear me talk about that in the podcast? Yeah. And I'm like, I didn't know. I was torn. I didn't know. I was so disappointed in myself for a little while, because I watched the movie and I'd been wanting to do that one for a while, but I knew it was it's such a great movie. I have to do this, right? Well, I'm like, what the? Once I watched it, I was like, this is going to be probably the worst podcast I've ever done, because it's going to be like, you know, it'd be like Chris Farley, like, did you see that scene? That was cool. And I couldn't. When I do these podcasts, I want to break down the scenes, but I also, it's a podcast. Believe it or not, I'm actually trying to be a little bit more entertaining than just breaking down scenes. And I couldn't find that hook. I couldn't find that scene that made me go, this is what this is about. Right. And like take for instance, like when I did, Saving Private Ryan, that opening scene, I probably cried like 3 times just trying to break down that scene, because it's so emotional, right? And that was the hook. And I'm like, I'm going to talk about this and I'm going to break this down the way it should be. Just that one scene, give it that respect. Well, I'm watching Pacific Rim and I'm like, what am I going to say here? But then when I broke it down the way I did, I had so much fun doing that. I was like, hey, this is kind of cool. Maybe I'm going to do more podcasts like this, where I literally just stamp it out and then just go back through the movie and go, what did I see here? And it gave me a new ability. I hope people liked that, but it gave me a new way of doing things. But it really is. It's a demo movie from beginning to end.
The LFV track is phenomenal. Yeah. And, you know, I put that down as one of my must-have movies to show off your home theater. Mm. And as I said, it's kaiju and Jaegers fighting. That's the entire thing.
Yeah.
You take your brain out, put it on a shelf, and just watch it.
Yeah. And it's, have you seen it in 3D?
I have. No, I've done the, obviously, the 4K HDR. Mm.
Yeah.
And it's spectacular in that, right?
It is.
It's funny. I got into watching a few older movies because of you, because you did the Final Countdown. And yes. I've watched the Final Countdown a couple of times, and it was always, it was years ago. So it was, you know, crappy VHS copy or DVD copy. And I got the 4K one, and oh my. Wow, that opening scene with the jets.
Yeah.
They did a great job with the sound on that, because obviously when that was done, that there was no object.
Yeah.
Whoever remastered that, both the quality of the audio and the actual movie, they did an amazing job. And I forgot how much I liked that cheesy movie. That is such a fun.
It is. It's just like, and I think the only reason we would call it cheesy, and it's funny, it's like, I know exactly what you're saying, but isn't it just the scene when they go back in time, that like that whirlpool, like vertical whirlpool they have to drive?
You just laugh.
And you're like, that's the best they could do back then.
Yep.
But it's like, that's really the only thing that makes it cheesy. The rest of the movie, I think, it's like legit. Right,
yeah, like, and it had solid actors, like the entire cast. Like, there were some A-list actors there, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
and but I started going down the cult movie rabbit hole. So I did the Toxic Avenger. That's still bad.
Oh wow, is it?
But apparently, it's still bad. It
didn't get good.
No, it didn't get good. But you know what I found? I watched again was Death Race. Was it Death Race 2000 with David Carradine?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I have watched that a number of times. I can't believe how much I like that stupid movie. My wife walked away. She's like, "This is dumb. I can't watch this." And I was like, "I don't know why, but I really there's something about it. I don't know if it's my nostalgia factor coming back, but I don't remember it being as good as that."
Yeah. And you know what movie, old movie that does not age well? I didn't do it on this podcast. I did it on my other podcast with my buddy John, and we used to review different movies once a week and stuff. It was Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, yeah.
It does not age well. It's slow. It's the special effects are bad. It was just like, that end scene when James Earl Jones turns into the snake or whatever. Yeah. And you're like, oh, and the acting throughout it, it's hysterical, but there's this nostalgia for it that you're just like, cause when you were a kid, you watched it or you saw it on HBO as a little kid, or it does not age well to me.
No. And you know, I was a huge Schwarzenegger fan, growing up. Cause that's, you know, it was Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
You know, like I was a huge, like, I remember like RoboCop. That was one of my go-to movies too, as a kid. I love that. Right. And, you know, I still love RoboCop. I think that is one of the best movies, you know, as it was cheesy, but still action-packed and, you know, had some pretty decent... I didn't like the remake so much. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
But I hate when they remake. Same thing with Total Recall. They did not need to remake Total Recall. It was, I think, the Total Recall we have is perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I love the it's, and that's what's funny is they remake it, and all it really does is reinforce how good the first one was.
Yep.
You know, when they do these types of movies, it's very rare they remake a movie and you go, oh, well, that's the way it should have been done. The only one is, and I talked about it last week, was Dread. And they actually did that properly the second time. The first time was awful. But I wouldn't even call that a remake. It's just another incarnation of it, really. And it's the correct one. Just like saying all these Batman movies, they're not remakes. They're just new version. And I think a lot of time, like, we're so used to that now too, as you know, as customers, we're not like when they come out with another Batman or a Spider-Man movie, we're getting accustomed to saying, oh, well, is this part of that? Or is this, it's just new. It's just a new version. Yeah. Oh, okay. We'll do that. And, whereas I think 20 years ago we would have been like, how's this not tied in? Is this the same Batman that, why isn't he, doesn't he know about the stuff that he did in the other movie? And it's like, no, it's not the same movie.
So I like that we can have that separation. You know, we had a debate at work, about Disney Plus and the great job they did with Star Wars and the new television, or I guess you call them television shows. I would be completely happy if they started taking, if they did a Dread series, like, so whoever owns the right to Dread, if they did a Dread series with Carl Urban, it has to be Carl, because he, and I was just actually, it was ironic you said that, I was watching that last night.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's one of my favorite movies. If they did a series with Carl Urban and explored that world, because, it's a comic book, they could do so much in an episodic type of thing. And that's what I love about what Disney Plus is doing. They're, instead of saying, here's a 2-hour movie, we're going to give you, because for me, The Mandalorian is a one big, long, massive movie, and it's all interconnected. Right. I would love to see a Dread series. I would love to see some of these things that are okay in a movie, but let's really dive into it. Let's do this. And I'm hoping that, we're going to start seeing more of that with these different streaming services, get into these, really intricate type of things that, just don't fit well into a movie.
Right. Yeah. Because you're pressed for time, and they don't have time to explore the stuff. And, going back to our earlier conversation about the Batman, that was what was so great about it. They were allowed to go 3 hours and really explore the character and all the characters, really. That's where, and I say this to my buddy John all the time in my other podcast, I'm like, we'll talk about a new, say we heard an announcement that somebody's going to be doing Dread, right? And it was going to come to streaming. The first question you have is it going to be a movie or is it going to be a show? And then we say, and what do we want? We want the show, because you want to be able to expand on that. And I think, Filoni with the Clone Wars, that really enabled all of those characters to really be explored in a way, especially in the Star Wars universe, that had never really been done before on a screen. And I mean, look at Ahsoka. She's arguably one of the most popular Star Wars characters, but that's because she has probably the most screen time. And they've delved into her character from being a child all the way to now we know her, we see her in The Mandalorian. And we didn't get that with even Luke or Anakin / Vader or Obi-Wan. We just got small snippets of them. We still love them, but look at what happened with what they did by just exploring that entire world. And we got Ahsoka out of it, really.
And that's the one thing that the Star Wars universe did do well. Is they had a lot of books that would delve into all the back characters. So, for example, Han Solo had a very involved story that talked about his, started as a smuggler and, sort of what happened to make him into the Han Solo he is now. And the same thing with the Jedi Academy and all that stuff. All that stuff was there. And then, so that was my way of knowing these backstories. And Disney has done the same thing. They're just saying, we're just going to put it on the screen now. So we're not going to write books. We're going to create right. this, and we're going to put it on the screen. And you're right. The Clone Wars was a small mention in a movie. And now it's what's the Clone Wars? 8 seasons?
Yeah. 8 seasons yeah. that are just, it's, and what's funny is I think a lot of people don't give it the credit because it's animated. So I think there's a segment of the population that's like, well, that's just animated. That's just for kids. Oh, that's not. It's like, I mean, well, kids can enjoy it. It's not an adult type thing. But if you're a Star Wars fan and you've skimped on, you know, the Clone Wars, you're missing out. And I would say the same about Rebels. I think Rebels is actually even more towards the adults than Clone Wars is. And
the rating's so much better. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the fact that George Lucas created Star Wars, but he was not the most gifted author. He, you know what I mean? If you look at the screenplays for Star Wars, they're not complicated. And the storylines are fairly simple, but the Clone Wars is incredibly well, you know, written, well acted. I mean, it takes a lot to, you know, as a voice actor, to be able to kind of put that in your performance when it's only your voice, right? So I think that, you know, the people that play these characters are phenomenal. And you know, I think I'm a huge Filoni fanboy. I think him and Favreau are going to do great things.
I hope so. I really do. I'm like, a little hiccup with Boba Fett, but
yeah. Give him Dredd. I'd love to see what they would do with Dredd.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would, yeah. I think
that's the one thing.
Go ahead.
I just can't believe someone won't pick up Dredd as a series because I don't know. I as far as I know, the movie did decently, but, and there was talk that Carl Urban was going to do a Dredd series. I think it was on Amazon Prime, but then he ended up doing The Boys instead. I think a Dredd series would be so good.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. It would. Lots to explore there too. Because of the movie, I started grabbing the book again, the comics again. And yeah, it would be. Do you think it might be, if you've read the comics, do you think there's a chance it could be too political to come out right now?
It very much could be. I do agree. Cause there is definitely that part to it.
Yeah.
So it would be difficult because, and you know, there's definitely a message there. I mean, in the era in which it was written, they definitely were saying something. So I think that you are correct that it might be too topical right now. And they'd have to tame it back, and then that wouldn't be Dredd.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think Dredd fans would be like, and that's what made the movie so good, is that they kind of hit on it in a way, you know, and it was faithful enough that we were all like, oh, okay, this is good, especially compared to the Stallone's Judge Dredd, which was just... That was a live action cartoon. It was just so poorly done compared to what Dredd is. Very much like we didn't get the Dredd we wanted there, like you're saying about Wolverine, right?
Yeah.
And not nearly. I mean, Hugh Jackman was great. It was a different version of Wolverine, but it's not the true Wolverine. We still enjoyed the character, but it wasn't even close to Dredd. It was too colorful, too comic booky, too cartoony, I should say, because comic books don't have to, you know, comic books can be dark. And
that scene when he had shot Mama and then gave her the slow-mo and pushed her out the window. Yeah. Like when you saw him standing over her as she came through, it looked like the panel of a comic book.
Yeah.
And I was in awe. I was like, they just did that so well. And I'm like, that is Dredd from a comic book. His whole costume, his helmet, everything, like the bikes, everything was so well done. And I was like, this is Dredd.
The city.
Yeah.
The city was like, that's a character, right? And the city was so well done. Everything about that. It's like that movie, 4K. It was awesome. The 3D on that one is absolutely one of my favorite 3D movies. It's absolutely phenomenal. And watching all the extras on it and what they did for the 3D, like they invented cameras for that, for 3D. And when he
That's
was
amazing.
Yeah, when he was shooting it and he wanted a certain shot, and it was I forget the scene exactly, but it was blood splatter. And the way they had to manipulate the blood in 3D and how they had to shoot it, they needed a special camera, so they made it. And it was like, oh, okay, all right, just make up some new stuff here. And I love little things like that you get out of movies, because they invent something and change the world. James Cameron's great at that, and I think we're going to get a huge, like I've said it before on the podcast, I think we're in for something really big this December with Avatar 2.
And that, you know, I really liked Avatar, and I thought, what are they going to do with the next? Because is there four of them?
Yeah, it's like four or six or something crazy.
Yeah.
It's like this.
But you know what? And there's another person. That's he's like a George Lucas. He has so much money and so much clout. Mm. He can just say, I'm going to tell this story, and there's going to be four of these movies, and you're going to agree to it because I'm James Cameron.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it. And, you know, and he... Same thing with Lucas. Lucas is like, oh, I need better special effects. Well, I'm going to make it. I'm, you know, they don't do what we need. So, you know, I'm going to create the special effects that we need. And these are the people that are driving these, and they're good storytellers.
Mm. Yeah. Right? And look at, we think of like somebody like a James Cameron who did like, you know, Terminator. He does these sci-fis, The Abyss, you know, you're doing all of these sci-fi movies, but yet, you know, they find the Titanic in the early 90s, I think. It was somebody out of Falmouth, too. They found the Titanic. Ed Cameron went right to work. Like, I'm going to make a movie out of that. I'm going to film the Titanic. I don't mean the movie, the Titanic. I mean the damn boat at the bottom of the ocean. I'm going down there. Yeah. It was him that said that was the first time they filmed it. It was him. So it's insane. And it's like all because... He's a movie maker. He's an artist, and he's looking for new ways to do things. And, you know, James Cameron, sci-fi guy, puts out one of the greatest love stories to be ever. It might not be the greatest actual, like, it's not Romeo and Juliet, but what I'm saying is on the big screen, there isn't a love story that's made more money, because there's what other movie has almost made more money? I think Absolutely. Avatar, his other movie, Avatar, you know what I mean? So it's like, and what was so great, and I've always said this about Titanic, what made Titanic so great at making money is it had something for everybody. Yep. And I mean, like, I don't care if you're like, you're the biggest, strongest, most macho man in the world. You're like, oh, boat sink, gonna go see. Oh, this is gonna be fun. Yeah, it's special effects, all of that. If, you know, Mr. Neanderthal can go see it, and then you go all the way down to your, you know, all the women loved the love story. And, you know, and I'm not trying to stereotype men and women. I'm saying, because I'm closer to that, you know, emotional woman than I am to a Neanderthal, because I'm just, I get weepy at these things. But I know.
I cried at Titanic. It was a good story.
Yeah.
I cried for Gladiator.
Oh, God, yeah.
at the end when he was wanted to go back, I remember my wife looked at me, she's like, what are you crying about? And I'm like he just wants to go home to his family. That's what this is all about. He now sees them.
My point is, like, Titanic was, it was just something for everybody. You had special effects, you had love story, you had all of this stuff, you had action, you had, it had everything. My parents don't go to the movies. They got, like, maybe once in a decade. They saw Titanic twice in the theaters. And my dad called me, he goes, we just saw Titanic again. Again? You haven't been to the movies since the 80s. And they'd seen Titanic twice. If my parents are seeing anything in a theater, you know it's a big movie. If they saw it twice, you know, that's a once in a lifetime. And that's what I love about that is, like, and I can't wait to see what he's going to be doing in December. I will be shocked if come December we just get an Avatar sequel and there's no new tech to it. There's no new something to it. And And it's funny, like, that's why his movies, I don't think, are coming. You know, like, Abyss isn't out, and True Lies isn't out. I think he keeps a lot of this stuff very proprietary for his, for that reason, to keep it special, you know?
I agree. Yeah. I'm very, like I said, I think it's going to be, definitely cool, and I'm looking forward to that. You know, I'm trying to think of, like, some of the movies I'm really looking forward to, because I'll be honest, I haven't been as much on watching trailers lately. Like, I just, with the pandemic, I wasn't looking forward to anything. So I have to get back into that where I'm like, you know, what is it that's coming out that I'm really jazzed to see, you know, from each of the things. Cause I mean, I remember when the first Avatar came out, I was super pumped to see that, you know, watched a whole bunch of the trailers, and there's nothing really on the horizon that I'm like, I have to go see that.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more, like, I love to go and see the blockbusters. I know yeah. Morbius isn't getting a lot of good press right now, but I am excited for that. You know what?
I don't watch a lot of television. Like, I honestly right. don't watch television because it's so that's how I used to always get it was right. was you'd see the trailer, and I consume a lot of YouTube and stuff like that, and you don't see the trailers on YouTube. So that, I think that's why it's not on my radars, because I'm just not looking at that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Top Gun Maverick. I'm dying.
You know what?
That one.
So, okay. So I'm not going to lie. I'm going to see that in the theaters. And that's because Top Gun was the 80s. Like that, you know, that was the first, I remember watching that movie. I definitely wore out a VHS yeah. watching that movie. I think, honestly, when I think about my most watched movies, Top Gun's up there. Blade Runner, I think, is yep. really high there, too. Which is weird, because I hated Blade Runner when I first saw it. Couldn't stand it.
Really?
And I couldn't stand it. And I don't know if it was I was too young.
Yeah, and it was like you didn't really, get it?
Yeah. And, you know, and I read the book in university. And we watched the movie again. I still didn't like it. And then just, I don't know. I watched it another couple of times. And then all of a sudden, it just hit me. And I was like, oh my, this is a great movie. And I got all the themes. And I have probably watched Blade Runner 40 or 50 times easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of my, it's probably one of my favorite movies, aside from obviously Star Wars.
Yeah. You like Star Wars, Andrew?
Yeah.
No, I know. I haven't watched Blade Runner. That's one of those movies that I've practically worn out in my brain. I watched it so much when I was younger. But yeah, the Top Gun, I want to say I wore that VHS out so much so that it's still to this day when one of the biggest upgrade memories I have is when I got the Laserdisc for Top Gun and seeing. Now, I'm not sure. Maybe the VHS looked just as good when the VHS was new, but I'd watched it so many times in my, quote, theater that when things start to degrade, you don't see it because it's not, you know, you don't see the end product until, you know, it wears over time, right? So it slowly, and you adjust to it. Well, when I went to the Laserdisc, that opening scene of them, when you see the crew on the deck of the aircraft carrier and the yellows and the colors, the way they popped, I don't think I've ever seen an upgrade that big because it was so degraded on my VHS.
Oh, I agree. And that was one of the first movies I bought in 4K.
Yeah.
Cause I said, I remember when it came out, I'm like, I want this movie in 4K. Because I think that it will be like 4K streaming. Like I have the Dolby Vision version on Apple and it looks great, but there's something about the disc. I don't know if it's the lack of compression or whatever the case, but it is a phenomenal disc. It's probably one of my favorites. And like you said, that opening scene, when, you know, it starts with that really slow guitar riff and you're like, okay, this is cool. And the mist. And then all of a sudden they hit Afterburners and
Danger Zone, I think it is.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. And I still grin like an idiot every single time.
I'm grinning and, now, and I'm just thinking, yep. I'm like, all right, can we put this on hold? I'm going to go throw it on.
And, you know, when someone's like, you know, what are we going to watch? I'm like, I bought Top Gun. And it's funny because my buddy's like, yeah, we're going to watch Top Gun. And the ladies are like, okay, we'll watch Top Gun.
Yeah.
But it's so, so like nostalgically 80s. Like it's just, oh.
Yeah.
And I can't wait because. And the only thing I'm sad about is that the reason I love the Tomcat so much was because of Top Gun, right? That entire movie was the F-14, and the new one he's in an F-18, and they do show an F-14 in one of the scenes, and I'm kind of like, what's that about?
Yeah, I'm hoping it looks like he's like some kind of a test pilot, or
he absolutely is because it shows him in what looks like a very futuristic jet, and then apparently they pull him back. Like I said, I don't know the entire plot because they've not released the whole thing, but it's got planes, they go fast, they shoot stuff down. It's going to be good.
So one of the things that it was really cool when I got the Zapedi is you can download anything, right? You just put it onto your hard drive and label it as a movie, and now I can play it. So there was a website that had the trailers for, you could download different trailers, and I got that one. I believe I even have it. It's in 4K, and that trailer with the sound, and downloaded and listening to that, because when you go to the movie theaters and you see trailers, that's nice, but when you watch them on YouTube or you watch them on anything, it's all compressed, and sometimes they even come through like really digitally.
Yeah,
I have a version of that on my Zapedi. That trailer is in, it's pristine. It's as good as any of our movies, right? And I've watched that trailer so many times because it looks so good. It's just like, and the sound and the like the bass and when they hit the afterburners or whatever in the oh my god, I can't wait for that movie. And it's like that. I've watched the trailer so many times. It's so funny, but
the worst part is that in my mind, I've created the perfect Top Gun 2. And the fear is always that it's not gonna match what I kind of wanted. Right,
Andrew, we're gonna get Boba Fett.
Yep. And that's the thing. It's, you know, you're gonna have to see Tom Cruise be all soft and wussy and nice to everybody. Exactly. That's the problem though. When you have such like, and that's the problem going back to something that is so classically loved, is that it's hard to match what you think it should be. Like I would need to be a movie writer trying to recapture what I felt about Top Gun in the 80s, because no matter what they do, it's not going to match what I felt about the original Top Gun, because that was the original. Now they're just trying to kind of, you know, do something.
Yeah.
And I don't think, is Tony Scott attached to that at all, or is that a whole new?
It's a good question. I have no idea. I just know I can't wait.
It's funny because I saw that because
I know watching the trailer as many times.
Well, we went to see the new Bond movie when that came out. Was it No Time to Die?
Yep.
And that was there, and it was in IMAX. And I just looked at my buddy and I'm like, we're going to see this in IMAX. Like, I'm going to the biggest, loudest theater, you know, and I'm going to get, you know, awesome seats, and, you know, it's going to be so cool.
Yeah. Actually, Top Gun Maverick, director is Joseph Kosinski.
Okay.
And writers, it doesn't look like I don't see anybody, I don't see him attached to it at all so far.
Oh, well, there's a reason Tony Scott's not attached to him, because he died in 2012.
Well, there you go.
I don't really keep up. I don't really keep up with my directors.
Yeah, there you go. Me neither. Nope. It's supposed to be it's saying it's coming out May 27th, 2022. So hopefully we'll get that soon.
That's good, because they push off Bond for so long that I was like, it's never coming out.
Yeah. Well, Top Gun was 2 years ago. It was supposed to be coming out around 4th of July 2 years ago. And they just kept pushing it and pushing it. So hopefully
we'll. Did you see the new Bond movie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have it I have it on disc, and that's one of the first movies I bought for the Kaleidoscape. It's spectacular.
What'd you think of the ending?
I like it. I like what they did. I liked, because again, it's one of those things that's a first, you know, we haven't had a full Bond story. Yep. Right. And I mean, it, obviously not just that movie. I mean, what is it? Five. So we have five, you know, Daniel Craig Bond movies that are an entity unto themselves. And we have, we've yet to have that. I mean, we have like, you know, you have the Sean Connery Bond, you have the Roger Moore Bond, you know, but it's not a complete story. They're all independent stories. And I well, like how
that's what I love. Cause
yeah.
Well, the opening scene of Casino Royale was his first time as Bond. That was when he got his 007 designation.
Yep.
And so we had a beginning and we have a definitive end. And,
oh yeah.
Right. And you know, I think, you know, Casino Royale hooked me. I thought, you know, because I was like everybody, Daniel Craig's going to be James Bond. Mm-hmm. And I was very much, I grew up with Pierce Brosnan as my Bond. That was when I started seeing it in the theaters. So he was a complete departure from that. But Daniel Craig, I think, is now my favorite Bond.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially he for just, me. It's,
yeah.
I wasn't a huge Bond fan growing up. I liked it. But my dad, wasn't a big movie goer. My dad wasn't really into this stuff. And I think most of the people I know that were huge, at least my age, that were huge James Bond fans, it was because their fathers were. And so I didn't see a lot of them. When I finally did, oh, of course, I love Sean Connery. He's great. But I don't have that emotional attachment to him. My favorite James Bond before Daniel Craig was actually Pierce Brosnan. Because I loved him on Remington Steele. So that goes, and the reason he didn't get, the reason Timothy Dalton ended up being Bond is because Pierce Brosnan couldn't get out of Remington Steele. So they brought in Timothy Dalton. And then by the time, you know, Pierce Brosnan was done with Remington Steele, they were like, okay, here we go. Now we'll put you in as James Bond. And I always thought watching, I'm like, he would be such a good James Bond. He would be my, the first James Bond I knew was Roger Moore. I saw him. That was the, my first James Bond movie in the theater. And so that was kind of, and I liked it. I thought it was great, but I didn't have that, that I don't have that emotional attachment to it to bring me back. But yeah, Daniel Craig is now my favorite James Bond because it's, again, get, just like I said about Robert Pattinson and Batman, it's such a great story. It's the best story. I still love Pierce Brosnan and I love those movies, but we get a, like you said, you know, we get a definitive beginning and we get a definitive ending for James Bond. And I've said to people that like, oh, I'm so disappointed they did that, blah, 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 the end of it. And I'm like, but that's why you're disappointed, is because you loved that movie and you loved that character so much that that's a pretty brave thing to do this day and age, is to actually be like, okay, this is it, you know, and we're ending everything right here. And
they also made it very clear that double oh seven is just a number, which they point that out. So obviously they knew that this was the end and that they were going a different direction. So they put those seeds in your mind that someone else will take up the 007 mantle. And you know, this is the way of being able to reboot the series. And, you know, a lot of people have argued that each Bond is a different Bond, that Connery is Agent 007 and James Bond is a code name. Right.
Right.
And that's a cool thought, is that you become James Bond. So James Bond could be anybody. And he dies, they make a new James Bond, and, you know, that sort of fits in with that. And I, you know, like I said, I'm very excited to see what they're going to do with the next series. I still don't know who they're going to cast. I'd love to see, like, Idris Elba would be a cool Bond, I think.
I think
he would.
You know who I think wouldn't be a good James Bond is Henry Cavill. He's James Bond is supposed to be the everyman in a tuxedo, for instance, right? Like, he's supposed to walk into a room and just be like, and be able to blend, but also be like, you know, look the part, look, you know, sophisticated, but blend in that environment. Henry Cavill is so big. He's just such a presence that you'd be like, well, he's not going to blend.
You know what? And the worst part is I just see him as Superman now.
Exactly. Right. And that was going to be my next point, is that now that doesn't mean he can't be James Bond, because we've seen like Christian Bale manipulate himself to play multiple different characters in his career. And we believe all of them. Right. Yeah. So you got the Machinist, and he was like, look at what he did for that. I think he got down to 80 pounds for that.
It was ridiculous.
Right. But then you see him in Batman, and he as Batman, and he actually was like, they actually had to get him to lose a little bit of weight because he was a little too heavy. Jacked. Yeah, he was too jacked. And of course, you know, American Psycho I love that. Chris Hemsworth, when he did, what was that race? What's the name of the racing movie he did?
I know which one you're talking about.
It's a true story too. And he played an actual person. I can't remember what, but anyways, but he had to lose. I mean, he goes from being Thor, and then he had to fit into that car and be that character. And he did it. So I'm not saying that Henry Cavill can't be Bond. I'm just saying, like, right now in my mind, there's no way he could be Bond, but there's an opportunity for him to, expand his like presence in Hollywood or in our image of him, to be able to actually change our minds on him being Superman, right? Like, all of a sudden, oh wow, look at, he is Bond. That's pretty cool. That would be awesome.
You know, speaking of Chris Hemsworth, have you seen him as Hulk Hogan?
No, but you just saying that, I can totally picture it.
So he's doing in my head. He's doing a Hulk Hogan biopic. And look it up. He is Hulk Hogan. The mannerisms, I was so impressed. Like, you talk about a good casting, and he physically looks the part.
Yeah.
And I mean, as I said, I'm a kid of the 80s, so I was a huge Hulk Hogan fan back in the early days of the WWF. And when I heard that he was playing Hulk Hogan, I looked it up, and I was like, I've never seen a more, like, just a, it's such a good casting. Now, I mean, and he can obviously act. So I'm very interested to see what that's going to be like, if they're going to do an awesome Hulk Hogan story.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's funny is that would be a lot of fun to see, because, all right, just off of what you were saying, I'm imagining in my head, and you're like, you picture him as Hulk Hogan, as we knew him. And just like you, Andrew, I loved Hulk Hogan growing up. I watched the cartoons in Saturday morning cartoons, and I watched WWF, and I was huge Hulk. WrestleMania. I saw WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 2. I was a teenager by then, and I loved that stuff. But Hulk Hogan is a character, right? We all did the voice, like, hey brother, you know, we all imitated him. Like, so for Chris Hemsworth to nail that, I think is pretty easy. But what's going to be, I think, about the movie is going to be, he's going to nail you with that. I picture them opening the movie and him acting just like the Hulk Hogan we know. But it's acting like a Hulk, like the actual man behind the scenes, which is going to be so much fun. Yeah. You know, we all know what he's like in the ring. We know his public presence. But now, and I think that's what's going to be cool for, like, Chris Hemsworth, is he can nail that. He can nail that character that he was publicly. And now, and that's going to bring some credibility to his acting, like him behind the scenes, how his family life and who he was. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. I didn't know that. I feel like I heard about it, but I'm like, but yeah, I'm very, that's, when does that do? Do you know?
I don't know. I just remember seeing a picture of it. Let's see if I can find it.
Oh, wow. Cool. We've been going 2 hours. Do you have some time? Because I still have a bunch of stuff to get to here.
I'm bumping hard against a deadline, because I've got my daughter's coming. And I promised I'd take him out for sushi today.
Okay. All right. So do you want to wrap up then?
Well, I'll tell you what. Do you want to go for 10 more minutes and maybe we can get some of your stuff in?
All right. Yeah, let's do that. Let's see if we can do that. So 25, here we go. We got 25 years ago, I wanted to mention that Twister became the first DVD. And I just wanted to make this comment, is that everybody's like, it changed the world. It did this. And this one tweet I saw, it said, world hasn't looked back on VHS the same way since. I just wanted to mention, and maybe I'll talk about it later too. I don't see DVD that way, because I had Laserdisc. So yeah. It didn't change the world to Laserdisc fans, because we actually were debating. We debated for years over which was better, DVD or Laserdisc. The biggest advantage we saw was DVD. You didn't have to flip the disc in the middle of the movie. Yep. But the picture and the sound quality wasn't always better than the Laserdisc. So it's very interesting that, you know, now it's like, yes, for the masses. And I'm not saying these people are wrong. They're right. It did. People hadn't looked back on VHS, and there was a lot of skeptics of DVD at the time, because you couldn't record, and people would be like, well, why would I buy that when I can buy a VHS player and I can record my soap operas in the daytime or my shows at night? That was the advantage of VHS. But yeah, so I just wanted to mention that quickly. Here we're getting into some actual message. Let's see. Gorinder. Hi, DJ. I still want to be a nerd. It actually considered somewhat cool these days. In regards to Easter eggs, hidden prizes, there was a textbook I had once that in the foreword, the author had a picture with his classic car, and there was a note to send your name, and he would draw a winner for his car. I forget how many people's names he ended up getting, but I may have been in the single digits. That's pretty cool. Imagine that in a textbook. And it's like, but like I said, when I do my Easter eggs or my little giveaways and stuff, it's like, you have to find it. And if you don't get a lot of, response for it, but I still think that's pretty cool. Let's see, we'll go on. Star Wars, WV Brew mentioned release Star Trek, not Star Wars. Sorry, Trekkie fans. Released Star Trek, the motion picture director's edition on 4K Blu-ray. And I believe that it's coming April 5th, premieres exclusively on Paramount Plus, April 5th. And, I think it's also coming with Atmos too on Paramount Plus.
Nice.
Have you seen Halo, Andrew?
I have not yet. I think just the first episode came out.
Yes,
and I'm gonna have to get a Paramount Plus, because I don't know, in Canada I think we do get Paramount Plus, so I have to figure that out.
I don't know
if it's on any other streaming services.
Really good. I really like the story that they've developed for, you know, from the game. I think that's going to be really interesting. The home theater experience of it, I would say, is good to very good. I wouldn't say it's phenomenal. It is an Atmos. I've only seen, obviously, the one episode, so who knows what they'll do in the next episode. But the first episode, I thought it was very engaging. I thought the picture was good. They open up the show with almost like like you're watching the video game, right? So
awesome.
The people, the characters are stylized like the video game, almost like Polar Express. You know what I mean?
Okay, very cool.
And it gradually transitions to live action.
Okay, that's going to be cool.
It is. It was really cool. I was like, so it brought you into the game. But I'm saying gradual. Like, I want to say it was like 20 minutes. And I realized, oh, yeah, they're not doing that anymore. So it was a very gradual thing. I got to watch the scene again. But I thought that was a lot of fun with the picture. But, yeah, I think it really surprised me, to be honest with you, how good... how engaged I was with the story. Like, I can't wait for next week's episode. So
now I've got to get a Paramount Plus.
There you go. Yeah. Well, and hopefully I'm right. Yeah. You're like, damn it. YouTube, Mike Schramm says, live stream would be cool if it's possible logistically. And yeah, I'm looking into doing that, possibly doing these on a live stream. Maybe, you know, sit downs with people, and maybe we could, if we keep going Sunday mornings like this, it wouldn't be a bad idea if people are up for that. So if the guests are up for it.
Yeah. And you could have some interaction, because people could, you know, obviously. And it was funny, because when I first started talking to you about this, I sort of had in my mind what we're going to talk about. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, we just went so many different places. So it would be cool to have other people sort of say, hey, what do you think of this? And that, you know, would direct the conversation to go other places.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm loving about this. And I'm like, if I went live stream, I don't know. I'm like right now, Andrew, like you got to get going in a few minutes. I'd be like, all right, I'm just going to stay here and answer more questions. My wife would never see me.
Well, it's like, funny because I asked Tom and Rob about, because they used to do their live recording, and they just basically said it's a lot of work, you know, mm-hmm. to set it up to get to work. Right. You know, they stopped. I used to watch AV Rant three times. I'd watch the live version. I watched the cleaned up version, and I'd listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. I did as well. And I want to do stuff like that. I actually, when I first started, I was putting out raw footage on Patreon for my Patreon supporters. And then I was doing the podcast a different way at the time. I'm still going to be putting some blooper stuff there, but yeah, even on a live stream, maybe I could go in that direction, especially with these conversations. It definitely can. I think that it's not as hard now. I have to look into actually doing it, but I don't think it's even as bad as, I think things have come a long way since even when Tom and Rob, like if they went back to it, I think there's some easier ways now. You could do it on Twitch. You can do it on YouTube. I know a bunch of people that do stuff on YouTube now, and it's fairly simple and straightforward. So, maybe that will be coming sooner. The only thing is I wouldn't want people to, like my guests, like yourself, I wouldn't want them to be like, oh, I don't want to do it live. Cause like if something goes wrong or somebody says something and it's live, it's live. But if we say something here and you're like, oh, I don't want that to get out. Okay. I could take it right out. No problem. Yeah. Not that that's ever happened. I haven't had to take anything out for anybody. These are all just 100%. As you could tell, we just babble on and I love this. This is what I want. More YouTube comments. Are you a home theater enthusiast? From awesome interview. Keep up the great work. Brett is always helpful. That's from Daddy077. More joy home theater. I had a blast. This is Andrew from last week. I had a blast and really look forward to our next conversation. Dan Carpenter, listening to the podcast now, I was thinking now that you have a kaleidoscape, if your Zapiti needs a new home, I'm not far away, LOL. And no, I'm keeping my Zapiti. I have like almost 600 movies on there. Wow. And anything that's not available on Kaleidoscape, I just go, bloop, change inputs and go right over to the Zapiti and I can grab it there. So let's see what else. Godfather trilogy, Justin Van Camp, he received his trilogy. Are you going to be grabbing that, Andrew? Are you a Godfather fan?
Not really. Godfather 1, loved it. Obviously, Godfather 2, and then we don't talk about the third one.
See, I grabbed all three of them, and I'm interested in Coda, the remaking of it. I haven't seen that one yet. Have you? Have you seen? Oh, okay. See, a lot of people say that, but I guess the newer version, Coda, is supposed to be really good. So
I might have to check that out.
Yeah, it might be worth a rental at least. Let's see. Thank you to everyone. I'll speed up a lot of things. Thank you to everybody congratulating me on the Kaleidoscape. Even Carl, who swore at me. I'm so jealous, you bleep. So funny. Let's see if we have greetings. Oh, this one, I wanted to mention this one definitely. Neil Horston says, at Brightside HD, greetings from Scotland. Fantastic Tuesday podcast with Andrew DJ. Keep up the good work. So I don't think I've heard from Neil before. It's at Hokem, Hokem. So I wanted to say hi. Thank you for the shout out at Brightside HD. That was great. Thank you, Neil. And I'm keeping up these Tuesday podcasts. And I brought us another Andrew this week. So
I'm from Nova Scotia, which is New Scotland.
Is that right?
Yep. That's what Nova Scotia is. Yeah, Nova Scotia is New Scotland.
Oh, I didn't know that. And I've spent a lot of time in Nova Scotia. My grandmother grew up there. My grandmother's from there. And I used to go up there in the summertime with my family. We used to drive up almost like every other summer. We would drive up for a few years. We did that. And so I've spent a lot of time. Halifax is where I spent most of my time. So
yeah, that's where I am now.
Are you really? Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we share a lot of obviously with you, we share a lot of similar names, right? Because you have a Falmouth, we have a Falmouth. Like, there's a lot of shared names in our provinces in your state.
Yeah. And what there since they put in that, my parents have gone up a bunch of times because my mom still has like cousins and stuff up there. That they're the Wilsons, the Wilson family. And since they put in that, what's that speedboat that goes from Maine to
the cat.
Yeah. They've taken that. And it's like, we used to drive up and it would take us, we'd drive up in 2 days. And then in coming home, I remember we always used to leave at like 8 a.m. and we'd be home by 8:00. It's like a 12-hour drive straight through. And that's what we did. But once they put that cat in, you can do it very comfortably in a day.
Oh yeah.
So, let's see. Anniversary DVD, Pacific Rim. Thank yous. We'll, you know, Dan Carpenter bought one. Let's see. Oh, the shark, the one shark. He's watching Deja Vu the other day or this weekend. He says this weekend, Deja Vu from 2006 with Denzel Washington.
That's what I thought that was. I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it's good. It's a time travel movie. It's really good. Check that one out. That's what's fun is people just keep sending me these things and you're like, oh yeah, I've got that one. And you crank it up. But yeah, I have a bunch of comments. You know what? I'm going to save a lot of these for next week because I know you got to get going, Andrew. Yeah. And I apologize to everybody. Keep the comments coming. I know everybody will. But honestly, this is what I want. I love this. I hope everybody's enjoying these conversations. Thank you to everybody for coming on. Andrew, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
Being another great example of how much fun this can be for people. I know this was probably the smoothest connection. We literally connected in 2 seconds. You powered up. I sent you the link and it was like, oh, he's already, I know you were sitting there waiting for me to send you the link. And it was like, well, boom.
I just upgraded to 1.5 gig 5. I have insane download speeds here.
Oh, 1.5. Yeah. Oh, I'm trying to manipulate my one. I got a 1 gig connection that I love. I can't even imagine you have 1.5 now.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a very nice, smooth connection today. Very easy. And obviously we hit it off right away. We just started. I was like, all right, I'm just going to hit record and we'll see where we go. An hour later, I'm like, oh, by the way, welcome everybody. This is Andrew. So, all right. Thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you everybody for listening. Keep those comments coming. I may end up adding a third podcast just so I can get to these because I'm having so much fun talking to people. So Andrew, are you going to come back? Are you willing to come back?
Absolutely.
Maybe even do a live stream.
Absolutely. Let me know.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, everybody. That's it for this week. I will be back on Friday with a big delve into my new Kaleidoscape. So till then, everybody, go push play. Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production. With theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.